The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to the Comic Book Chronicles.
We don't have. How'd you get my ringtone? I don't understand that.
You know what? I'm a
man. Oh, you don't have the sound. Ways. I don't have the sound effects. Nobody has sound effects.
Yeah, no. But we are starting out gangbusters here, folks. again, like I said, welcome to the Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host for tonight, Roddy Cat. His boo, yay. Thank you, Matt Wang. And with me tonight, we have Mr. the one and only Vine Specialist, the person who is probably looking for the sound effects right now.
I can't find it. I don't remember where it's at.
That's fine. The man in the mask, you know him, you love him, PCN underscore dirt.
Yay! My mommy loves me. I know that much for sure.
Hey, and you know what? Sometimes that is all that counts. We are here tonight on this occasion without one Tim DOWG, who you can find at Tim DOWG98. He's in the process of moving right now. And we will probably be joined by one Agent underscore 70, who is still on mission and is flying his way home or training or however he gets his way. We don't know. He's real secretive about that kind of stuff. So without further ado, there we go. So without further ado, let us chronicle some comics. As always, we will start with the books of the week. And I think I should probably turn this off or something. So,
we'll hear some other random sound effect.
I know, right? Well, luckily I muted it. So, thinking. So, Dirt, you got any books you want to throw out real quick? Before you do that, maybe I should take this time to do something that I probably should have done in a second ago, which is to tell you that this podcast, as it always can be found at cspn.us. We are part of the Cold Slither Network, so go check us out. There's a bunch of good podcasts over there. You can subscribe to the podcast at the link bit.ly.cbcronpod, and that'll take you to our probably the iTunes page, I believe it or not. You can find me at Roddy Cat, and also at News Nerds Need. You can find Dirt at Pop Culture Network and on Vine, where he does his Vine reviews. Let's see. You can find Tim at CBCron and at TimDog98, and of course at TheClickNation.com. And Mr. Agent 70, you can find Agent underscore 70. Do not forget the underscore. He gets cross about that. Let's see. Now then, if there's nothing else, which we can get to ask later on, what you got, sir?
Yeah, well, I just realized I'm using a new computer tonight, and I don't have my screen sharing app on here, so I can't show the covers right now.
Ah, okay.
So...
let's see what I can do about that.
Yeah, well, because I use Google Picasa, which, of course, they're ending, but that is the one video viewer or image viewer I found that Hangouts will actually share the image.
Right.
Because the one that's built into Windows, if you try to use that for whatever reason, you just get a black screen. Of course, I just realized I don't have that installed on this new computer. So, no covers.
No problem.
I got to look because I won't remember. But one book that stood out to me this week was Civil War II Kingpin, number 2.
Ah, yes.
And I don't know, did you read this one?
I did not. I didn't get a chance to.
Oh, you're missing out.
I know.
Did you read the first one?
Yeah, the first one was great.
I was going to say, the first one was a pleasant surprise, came out of nowhere. And I wasn't really sure what to expect. The artwork is not the greatest in this book, and I'll just throw that out there right now because I know some people will pick it up and go, ugh, like, what is this? But for the story they're telling, it works, because the story is about this, the dirty, grimy underbelly of the Marvel Universe where all the criminals are, and it's no spoiler now because we found this out last issue, but there's an Inhuman that Kingpin has found who his ability seems to be that he can hide from Ulysses. So whenever this Inhuman does something, Ulysses doesn't see it or doesn't sense it or doesn't figure it into his programming, whatever the deal is. And so Kingpin is basically using this guy to help run his criminal empire. Mm-hmm. And
now, wait, so I thought he was invisible to all other Inhumans, because I remember a couple times in the last issue, especially, well, or and maybe it could have been circumstances around where he was trying to see him, because I think he was trying to get the attention of Medusa, and she wasn't having any of it. But then
I'm not sure if the specifics of it, but the point is that whatever he does, Ulysses doesn't see it, and that's so right. Kingpin can use him to get away with a whole bunch of stuff. And the heroes of the Marvel Universe don't know. And again, this plays into one of the fun things that I really enjoyed about the first issue, where the heroes of the Marvel Universe are seen as the people who get in the way, and they're full of themselves, and you know they tend to cause a lot of problems, and that things may have not been great before, but they worked. There was a certain ethic to things, and the heroes have come in and ruined how everything works in the universe. And so it plays on those concepts and adds on to it. And Kingpin is trying to build this Inhuman up. It's this weaselly little guy. He's got messed up, fluffy hair, and these big Coke bottle glasses. And he's trying to teach this guy how to be a criminal mastermind, how to be more sure of himself, and how to be a better member of the team, basically. And so, it like I said, it plays on a lot of assumptions that you make about heroes and villains, the way it shows the heroes not in the best light, and it shows the villains as people who, you know, they're not good guys, but they're not trying to be evil. They're just trying to make things work, and this is how they know that society works in a certain way. So I like how it plays upon that, and it's got some humor thrown in there that I enjoy, the way it plays around with the fact that this guy is not a badass in any way, and Kingpin is trying to turn him into one. So it's just a fun, amusing book, and I've really enjoyed it. And so I think it's one that people should pay a little more attention to, especially if they're getting kind of burned out on all of these crossovers and you get a lot of the same stuff again and again and the same people butting heads over and over. This is a breath of fresh air to all of these crossover fatigue that we get sometimes.
Yeah, I got to say, sometimes during these events, and like you said, there is a bunch of fatigue. There are times where you get that one or two, those one or two side stories that just end up being more compelling than the actual story in some cases. Yeah. You know, or we get a side that we rarely ever get to see, except for, I guess they're starting to do it a little bit more lately, but you know, like nobody would have been thinking about King. Well, I guess lately they have been thinking about, like, say the criminal side, the Kingpin side, but I guess things like Superior Spider-Man and, or, you know, some of the other side crossover books of the past have been kind of bringing it up. So I kind of enjoy that. I'm kind of looking forward to reading this one to see what happened. I just think it's like, it is kind of convenient though that, you know, all right, so it just so happens we have these outcroppings of Inhumans kind of popping up here and there, and it just so happened to fit, you know, different molds. But hey, you got to do what you can. So, and I guess that's what you're good for, because you can introduce to new things that wasn't there in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
So just to tell the story. So cool beans. Wait, do we know, who's right now?
I don't know offhand. Let me see if I can find it here.
I was curious if it was anybody we
knew about. If I can zoom in here on the cover, it is Rosenberg. No idea who that is.
Oh, Matthew Rosenberg, I believe. That sounds about right. Okay, and that name is slightly familiar somehow, but I can't remember from where. Okay, cool. So let us go on then. I don't think I was going to read more books than this, but that's fine. Did you read Moon Knight number 5?
I did.
What'd you think? That was my first impression.
I still like the story. I like where it's going. We got another twist. Something that, you know, this story, one thing I was just talking about is the idea of taking your expectations and turning it on its head. And we've got another story here where certain things that you assume to be true within the rules of a character have turned out to not be the case. There's something else going on with Moon Knight, other than just the fact that he may be going crazy. It's apparently being orchestrated. he's being played with in order to, I don't even know how to say it without, you know, giving things away, but
build it back up, maybe.
Yeah, well, it's like things are not what they seem, right, but they're not what you thought they were when they weren't what they seemed, which is like, I don't know what the term is for that, but it's yeah, it's an enigma wrapped in a illusion. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I just love the way the story has unfolded and the way it keeps going and the way that once you think you've got a good handle on things, then it throws it back in your face again. Mm-hmm. And this issue, we had like what, 8 different guest artists come in for all these different like dream sequences or whatever you want to call them, these psychotic episodes or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, that was nice. And apparently they're going to be doing that again, I guess, some more next issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, this has been a series that, again, I didn't really expect a whole lot out. And it's turned out to be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. And the good thing about the art in this one is you notice that even though you know you have different artists, they don't contrast too much. You know, it's like the
yeah, I mean, there are times you could tell that it was... Well, go ahead. Go for it. There were times that you could tell that the art got a lot sharper, mm-hmm, or it got a lot more detailed, but it worked in the context of this story since he is having these mental breaks, and the artwork was when he was going into one of these other episodes or one of these other realities or whatever you want to call it. So even though the art would change, it made sense within the story because it wasn't just like, you know, he's walking down the hall and you turn the page and he sits down in the chair and it's a different artist, so it looks completely different. This was reality shifts and everything around him is suddenly different. And so having a new artist come in to draw that particular sequence makes sense in the concept of the story. So I didn't mind it at all in this book.
Yeah, there was the one page in particular. I had a screenshot of it, but I wish I could. I totally forgot to switch it over because apparently, like you said, Photos doesn't work and it's doesn't play well with Google anyway. But there's that one page where he comes into one of the other landscapes. You know the one I'm talking about? And you just see nothing but, you know, the one thing in the background and the layout of the land. And it's like, well, this is different. You wasn't expecting that, but it's a really nice shot of it. And that was cool. But yeah, this, I'm, like you said, I'm still interested in the story also. The twist that comes in was like, okay, I knew this was a thing that was a thing, but wait, so all this other stuff is not the case then? Or is this just like a long running thing? Because as one would know, and this is not necessarily giving away things, but it might kind of be. So we know Mark Spector, he's Moon Knight. He has had a couple of different personalities in the past, and a couple of them have been seemingly put away. At least most of them have been seemingly put away, with the exception of a couple, and one comes into play, and that's all I'll say about that. But it's like, okay, we will see where...
Oh, the other like versions of him, his other... Yes. Yeah. And I guess, to the story credit, like one of the things that it is playing off of is the fact that Moon Knight as a character is one of those like Hawkman where it seems like every 10 years he's reinvented. Right. So he has a different alien. Looks different. His connection to Egypt is different. And so it's taking all of that and trying to make sense of it, in a way that doesn't make sense, but it does make sense. So that's the fun of it, is that you're, and that's something that I give DC a lot of credit for a lot of times, the way it deals with, you know, Superman and Batman and Green Lantern, you know, characters that have been around for 75 years, and they take the different aspects of them and mishmash them, and they play off, you know, those different incarnations. That's something that they're doing here on the Marvel side with Moon Knight, you know, because Moon Knight, it seems like every time a new writer comes in, they go, oh, well, I have a different way of doing this, and I have a different idea in mind of who he is. I have a different idea of what his powers are, and I have a different idea of how his alter ego should be. And so it changes, you know, so many times over his history that this is actually working to take all those pieces and thread them together in a way that is interesting. So yeah, I give him all the credit in the world for doing something like that, because that's the type of stuff I enjoy.
Yeah, indeed. So hopefully this one will continue to be intriguing. All right, so next up, we have, I guess, sticking with Marvel here, Doctor Strange number 10. Did you read that?
No, I don't. I have not been reading Doctor Strange.
Okay, it's actually been in pretty good. If you like magic, it's actually been pretty good. You know, so here we have the conclusion to The Last Days of Magic. There is a big battle between, I guess it's a three-way battle between the thing that's in Doctor Strange's cellar, Doctor Strange, and the Imperator, I can't remember dude's name, but the group is called the Imperial. And it's the one last ditch battle that is having, like, there's not much battle left. He's just using scraps of everything he's at and not doing fully well until the creature kind of helps him, but then doesn't. And then you start seeing some things kind of turn here. But I will say that the battle concludes. Magic is still in a place, I think. Like, it is still in not a good place and may or may not be much still around. Apparently there may not still be around, but the battle was won. The villain was dealt with in a way, which we may see him again. But there's another wrinkle that was also introduced or let loose, as it were, that we won't know at this point what's going to happen with that. There was a little bit of a what could have been a tease at what could be coming with that at the end of it, but we don't know. That being said, though, it was a pretty, I guess, for the most part, clean ending. Like, it was satisfactory because you see the various factions or factors kind of come into play. That's been going on. You see Doctor Strange, you see the group that he was that he's fighting with, and you see some other characters that were kind of in the background, kind of help out in their own way. And you even kind of go back to the beginning of the first issue where he basically reintroduces the Doctor, reintroduces himself, you know, as if it's kind of start over again in a sense, but it's actually kind of keeping on going, but just kind of bringing him back to where he was. But it was enjoyable, and like I said, I've been enjoying the book. The art is great. There's probably been like one or two spots where I was like, "What's going on here?" But it wasn't that it was bad. It was just like, okay, there was just a good bit going on the page on the panel, I should say. So, but outside of that, I enjoyed reading this.
So, is this the end of this arc?
Yes.
Okay, this is the Last Days of Magic.
This is the end of the arc, and where are they going to go next? Which I think I can't remember what happened in the very last page, but the past, you know, after the last page where they have the coming issue, kind of hints to something, but I can't remember what that is right about now. And I think, like I said, a couple of those things coming out of it is probably going to come back into play because there was no finality to it. You knew it was kind of like, I think Tim had mentioned this a little while ago with Jason Irwin's other book. Kind of sets up a new character that ends up coming back sometime later on. And I think there's at least one or two of those happening. So. But that is for another later date.
Well, another one I read this week, and this is one I really enjoyed. Probably my click of the week is going to be Sheriff of Babylon, number 9. I don't know if you've been reading this series at all, but you should. There's so much that's going on, and the book is so layered and interwoven. The main thing we've been getting to in the last couple issues is that there's one of the main terrorists in Baghdad. They are going to attempt to capture or kill or whatever in order to help bring stability to the area that they're in. And there's so many little things that have happened in the series that have been, in one way or another, leading up to this point. Many things that inadvertently have been leading to this that you didn't realize were connected, that now you can see these connections as how certain things that happened before have come back to play a role in this this operation that they're staging. And one of the really great things that they've done in this issue is they dropped a clue. There's a comment in a conversation between our sheriff, who is working with the U.S. military. He's having a conversation with another guy who's a security contractor who's been going in and cleaning out, flushing out some of these terrorists, there's a line that's kind of thrown into this conversation, which makes him realize that a murder that took place before the beginning of the first issue, one of the things that kicks off this whole series of events that he's been dealing with, it's tied in now. Something that he overlooked or something that he didn't know was happening all the way back before issue one, leading into issue one, is coming back around and plugging itself right into the middle here at the end of issue nine. And so, again, like it's one of those things that blows my mind. It makes me go back and read. In fact, I've just gone back and reread the first couple issues after reading nine because I want to go back and remember some of the stuff that happened early on, because I'm finding more and more as I go through that everything has played a part in one way or another into something else. And there's almost nothing that's happened by chance and almost nothing that's been thrown in just for the sake of, you know, we got to kill a page, so here's a character, you know, gets hit by a bus, no big deal, you know, whatever, just to show how violent it is in Iraq. But really, it's like that was for a reason. That leads to something that somehow ties in. And so everything that we've seen so far in this series has been building up to this, whether you knew it or not. And it's all tied back around. And I just love when you can tell that the story's been so well crafted that all of those pieces work together like that. So it's, again, you know, here we are, number nine, and every issue has blown me away, you know, more and more. And, I just can't believe how good, how much the quality has stood the test of this entire series. So if you're not reading it, you need to be reading it. Go find it and read it. Or when the trade comes out, buy the trade. But it's definitely something that you've got to get your hands on and get your mind around, because it is fantastic.
Yeah, you've definitely been big on this book from the beginning. And and it's good to know that it's been keeping up, like you said, because like you also said, it's rare that a book actually does that. I mean, notable exceptions, which also, hey, Vision, which is written by the same writer. So, you know, take heed on that one. Cool. So then next we have, let's see, it's not like I have that much left, but Vote Loki number 3. So this is... I'm kind of curious as to where this book is. Well, it's actually kind of clear now that I think about it, because given the election cycle, it was easy pickings to kind of say, hey, who could we get to that would make some sense to do something like this? And it makes a little bit of sense. It's not going completely into the realm of reality as it were, but there are familiar beats. Like if you know how the election cycles work and everything around the political cycle works and you enjoy that kind of stuff, I think you might like this, because you're kind of seeing it from a couple of different sides. Like you're seeing, so basically what the premise is, if you don't know already, Loki's running for office, which he apparently did not intend to, but as it were. And you've seen this kind of things in movies before. So reluctant hero ends up running for office, but this hero is actually the god of lies or the god of stories, whatever his determination is right now. It's Loki. I mean, like you know the character of Loki. He's known for lying. He's even said in the first book, you know, if he was running for president, he would lie to you in your face and you would love it. And all of that just kind of start his road, even though at the time he wasn't thinking about running. Somewhere between the middle of that book and the end of that book, he ends up wanting to. But on the other side of this, and then you see him going on the campaign train, kissing babies and schmoozing and doing all this other stuff. And of course, you have this reporter Nisa, who has some tragedy in her life. Before I go on, I would like to welcome to the show, if he's ready, I'm hoping he is, one, Agent 70.
What's up, everybody?
How's it going,
yeah,
sir?
It is a late night at the office this, you know, tonight, so I'm sorry for getting on a little late, but I'm glad to be able to catch you guys. Sounds like we're still reviewing books.
We are.
Awesome.
I'm not sure about Dirt, but I only had a couple of months, so after I finish this one, we can get into what you got into.
Sure, it'll be quick.
Okay, cool. So, but like I was saying, Loki's on the campaign trail, and Loki's being Loki, you know, being charismatic, but also just doing the schmoozing and the being the politician, you know, as he apparently could be. But on the other side is we have this reporter Nisa, who's had some tragedy in her background, that had to deal with Loki. So she's trying to make him out to be the fraud that she thinks he is. And every time she seems to find a lead, something ends up happening to where that lead ends up going away. So, like, she had one lead that was that started in the beginning where there was an assassination attempt on political candidates. Loki just so happened to be there in disguise, and he broke it up, and which started us on his road. So she's thinking he might have had to, he had all that done, you know, for all of this to happen, but she hasn't had much luck in proving it. In fact, Loki's tried to win her on his side, but ended up also seemingly using her. We still don't know what that was about, but we know there was some shenanigans going on in the background with the story that she wrote that ended up going in his favor when it wasn't actually. As a matter of fact, the article was still intact. It's just that the headline was changed and people took it as that. You know, people, so because basically it's playing on the notion of people don't read the headlines. I mean, people don't read the story, just the headlines type of stuff. So you get that kind of thing going on in the story. And also, while Loki's been on the campaign trail, you know, he's been asked questions about this and that and the other. And then, like, say, in this issue, there's a situation in Latveria. And of course, as politicians tend to do, they talk about, well, this is what I would do if I was handling this situation and blah, 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 blah. And then Loki says this one thing, and then this reporter goes and tries to catch him in that lie. And everything, when she catches him in that lie, or seemingly catches him in that lie, Loki turns it around. So it's kind of been that type of back and forth throughout these issues. I'm not sure how long this series is going to last, or because I don't think it said anything about whether it was a, I think it was a miniseries, but I'm not sure.
I want to say it's a 4-issue, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Which would probably play into how this book, this issue ends then, but we'd still, because with one issue left, I guess you start to plan a clean house, but there could be a few more issues of this, like if they chose to go back 5-4, because it, like I said, it has been something to read. Like, I can't say it's Agent of Asgard good, or yeah, but it has been a cool read. It was like, huh, okay, yeah, you see this kind of stuff out in the world, and you see it as it pertains to Loki as far as politics are concerned and things around that. So, and
I was going to say, I haven't read this
mystery going on. Sorry.
There's nice. Like a small delay. Know,
we've done that twice.
Delay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I haven't read it in depth, but I have flipped through every issue that's come through. And one of the things that I've noticed has popped up at least a couple times is dealing with the whole cult of personality.
Yep.
Which is, that's not, besides CM Punk's entrance music, it's not something that's like one political party versus another. It's just politics.
Exactly.
And that's one thing I've seen on this. It's like, it's not picking a side. It's just the absurdity of the whole thing.
And that's what I've been enjoying about the book. Yeah. You're saying
that's
which?
All, that's all.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say, that's all I was really, was just the fact that it's not, you know, picking a side on one thing or another. It's just making fun of the whole process that we go through and all the money that's spent and the things that everybody says. It's pretty much all of it's a lie in the end anyway, mm-hmm. but it's just, you know, he's the king of it, and so it just works out for him even when he doesn't really want it to. Right. And so that's, I've kind of enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah. And like I say, it doesn't seem like he actually does. Like, there doesn't necessarily point to him actually having anything to do with anything about it in the background of this. But we never know. I mean, we won't know until we get to the end of this, whether that's the case or not. But regardless of whether it is or not, it's a good show. All right, so Agent 70, what you got for us, sir?
So you guys have run through all the books that you read this week?
No, I still have like one or two more. But I can tell you. We did
Moon Knight. We did Kingpin. We did Sheriff of Babylon.
Okay.
Loki. I think that's it, right? Just those.
That was it. Yeah.
Well, I'll bring up Doctor Strange number 10 then, because I see that Roddy also read that.
Yeah, actually, we did talk about that.
Oh, okay, fine.
No, go ahead. You got something to add?
I like Doctor Strange number 10, but I agree with some of the notes I read that Roddy left, is that in that there is there's no finality to the finale of the quote unquote last days of magic, because it feels like this is just the opening arc for a much longer story, or at least a middle, maybe even a middle arc for a much longer story. So, you know, Aaron still got me going. You know, he's got me along for the ride. Bakalo still got me along for the ride. But it felt like I thought we were going to get some sort of, you know, finality to the story. But, you know, it's just another step in a much larger tale. What we have, you know, with the defeat of the Empiricule, as it were. You know, we still see that, you know, you guys didn't spoil anything by saying that, you know, the last days of magic are not quite over.
Right.
So, yeah, you guys did Moon Knight. I didn't read all that much more. How about Invincible Iron Man number 12? Anybody?
I meant to get to this, but I have not.
Dirt?
Yeah, I read it.
Okay. So, what I found interesting about this issue is that this issue, more so than anything we've read in the last month or two, is really propelling the book forward towards the Marvel Now that's been revealed to us. Where, you know, in this book, spoiler alert, Tony Stark and Riri actually meet. And, you know, it's that connection that's made. And there's also a reconnection with Victor Von Doom. So the two at least Iron Man titles that have been revealed to us through solicits and announcements at San Diego Comic-Con, it seems like this issue is, you know, moving the story forward towards those two spin-offs / directions for the Iron Man corner of the Marvel Universe. So if you're looking to see how we get to the Marvel Now status quo, this book is probably essential reading, because you want to pick it up and see how these characters interact and how they start down this path to that, you know, to that at least way station, if not destination.
I enjoyed it, but it still feels a little rushed.
Right.
And just
I agree with this, that.
And it's one of those things where if I didn't know what was coming, I'd probably go, you know, okay, whatever. But the fact that I know where this is going, and for the way that it just kind of drops out of nowhere, and it's right in the middle of the story now, and I know that in, you know, 2 months, whatever, everything is going to be flipped around completely different, that, you know, it's like, wow, we're just not taking any time with our storytelling. We're just getting right to it.
Yeah, because right now. it felt like that the Tech Ninja thing took so long. And now we've gone from the the aftermath of the Tech Ninja stuff to this. And this issue, like I said, propels the story forward, and as Dirt mentioned, in almost a very rushed way to get to the, you know, to get to the destination at Marvel Now, or the all-new Marvel Now, whatever.
Yeah, I kind of got to say, I have been catching up with Invincible Iron Man, and I have read everything up to this issue. And I thought that you're right, it does feel a little bit rushed in that, even though that first arc seemed like it was going a little bit, but it seemed like there was also could have been some more to it. But I guess that was kind of another one of those things, like, well, we're just setting her up so we can come back to that and the Technogolem later. But let's
the Technogolem.
Yeah. But which, by the way, is another Inhuman that, you know, happened to fit story, which, as we were talking about before you got on, Agent 70. So, but yeah, they just kind of put that away, and so they can come back to it now. But let's just go ahead and get to the story, you know, get to the story. Because that last issue was like, all right, and now Civil War.
Right. Right. Absolutely. All righty. How about Batman number 4?
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about it?
Let me find it here.
We have not.
Did everybody read it?
I read it.
No, Roddy. Come on, Roddy.
Hey.
Come on.
Easing into my DC.
All right. Well, one of the things that I liked about this story is the way it's reintroducing. Last month at the end of the, or last, I guess 2 weeks ago, because this is a bi-monthly book. Duo-monthly book? Bi-weekly, is that? Yeah, okay. Twice a month. That's how we say it, where I'm from. At the end of last one, we saw the return of Hugo Strange and Psycho Pirate. Yeah, which are two guys that don't make a lot of appearances in the DC Universe. And Psycho Pirate is one of those characters that I remember from the Animal Man Grant Morrison run. He was one of those forgotten characters that was revived during that run. And I've always enjoyed him. But anyway, the way that they've used those two villains, you know, Hugo Strange is one of those guys who's known for tearing Batman down and trying to get into his psyche and whatever. And sometimes it works, sometimes it really doesn't. He's kind of, you know, a one-note player. But when you bring in someone like the Psycho Pirate, who has the ability to play with emotions, and you've got emotions being played with at the same time, you've got a guy who's trying to destroy your mind and break you down, we find that even these powerful heroes of Gotham, they may be able to stop a plane from crashing into the bay, but they can't fight the mental battles like Bruce Wayne can. And I thought that was a very interesting way that they played off the strengths and the weaknesses of the two characters, especially because in the last couple issues, Batman's been looking at these guys going, they're so strong and so powerful, they're just like Superman, you know, what can I really do? You know, I know the city better than they do, but that's about it. But we realize that, no, there is actually a lot more that Batman brings to the table, even though he doesn't have those amazing superpowers. So I thought that was just a really brilliant, fun, interesting way that they were able to take those ideas and just flip them on their head. And so I like the way that they've been playing with these characters. And I still, you know, even though we don't really know a whole lot about Gotham and Gotham Girl, I think they're still fun characters. I hope they stick around. I hope there's not some tragedy at the end of next issue and they're gone forever, you know, right, like that.
I was about to say, I'm glad you mentioned it, because to a certain extent, I was kind of afraid that they would be kind of throwaway characters, you know, kind of created specifically for Tom King's opening arc on Batman. And, you know, kind of as plot devices as opposed to actual characters they're going to develop.
Right.
But I really hope, I echo your thoughts, I hope that they, you know, they stick around, and I hope that they develop them further. It, you know, it's a really, like you said, it's a really interesting, you know, like juxtaposing, you know, these two Gotham characters against Batman, and just seeing how, you know, the regular dude, you know, obviously, you know, peak human basically, compares to these, you know, these very, very much enhanced Superman level type heroes. And obviously, there is a tie-in with a movie that's about to come out in this book, and it's pretty, you know, it's pretty straightforward. It was revealed at the end of the last issue, and there's a lot more to it revealed in this issue. And if I'm going to hit the spoiler bell, it involves an X and a Force, but not an X-Force.
A Force that's it's a Force that's on a task.
That's right.
Well played.
A squad that may not survive. but I do
it,
like,
I was about to say, aren't you guys glad I was able to make it on tonight?
I do like the fact, I mean, you mentioned that it's tying in with those guys, and obviously with the movie, you know, opening and all that stuff, that there has to be some sort of, you know, corporate synergy. You got to tie them in to some corner of the DC universe, despite the fact that they're getting their own books, you know, just to kind of plaster them out a little more. But even with all of that, we're still only getting hints and name drops. We're not getting, you know, hammered in the face by him. Like, it's not like, you know, Batman's fighting this guy and all of a sudden Harley Quinn's standing in the middle of downtown Gotham starting fires. Now he's got to go deal with that. Like, it's handled a little more maturely.
That might be next issue.
I was about to say, I don't know. This is the week for that, because she's got, like, four books out this
week.
Yeah,
but, I mean, we've gotten two issues of hints as opposed
right.
to...
Right.
It's taken over the book, and now, you know, suddenly you got to deal with that in the middle of this story. It's working more as a subplot, working its way up to the top, while this other plot works itself out.
Right.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's see what else that covers. I skimmed Aquaman number 3. Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you had any more DC dirt, because we basically covered everything.
Yeah,
I read.
I've got a couple, but all right, I did not read Aquaman, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, no, I was just going to say very quickly, Aquaman number 3, you know, there's been an incident. I'll ring the spoiler bell very quickly. There's been an incident involving the sinking of a United States warship, and the Atlanteans have been set up and blamed for it. And this issue basically tells the tale of how Aquaman is trying to settle things peacefully, and, you know, the events of the story just don't allow him to do this. And moving forward, there's a jailbreak, and you know, we're left on a cliffhanger that appears to be Aquaman and Mira against the considerable might of the United States Armed Forces. I actually missed the Marvel book that I read. Did anyone read Uncanny Inhumans number 12?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe I'll say, what's that? Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much out this week, so I found myself, like, even skimming Uncanny X-Men, which I hate, and I sort of hate by. yeah, I hate to say it. Like, I skimmed Uncanny X-Men this week, and it was awful. But anyway, getting back to Uncanny Inhumans, which is actually halfway decent. you know, we're left with, you know, where we left off is the destruction of Stark Tower and Medusa trying to figure out, you know, who's behind it, and tasking Lockjaw and what is this guy, Frank, the cop, the inhuman cop, to try to find out who's behind this. And you know, they encounter Lash and Uhura, Black Bolt and Medusa's son, trying to figure out who's behind this. And basically they're set up by Lash and his forces to kind of take the fall when bum bum bum, members of the Ultimates and Captain Marvel, one side of Civil War II, step in. So that's pretty much that.
I enjoyed it. I don't know that I necessarily felt like...
It moved the story along pretty well, I thought.
Yeah. I didn't feel like I was blown away necessarily by anything that happened in it. Like, there have been other issues where things have unfolded that have been surprising and shocking, and I didn't really feel like, oh my gosh, it's those guys, you
right.
know, type of thing. But I definitely enjoyed it.
It's been one of the stronger issues.
I like the action of it. It was a lot of fun to see some of the mayhem that they bring about and the way that they've set up Medusa, basically.
Right.
Where, you know, even if you're not in the middle of everything, you're in the middle of everything. So it still counts as if you're in the middle of everything. So
right.
it's kind of almost impossible to get away from, which I enjoyed. So, yeah, I thought it was fun, even though it wasn't like the most... jaw-droppingly awesome book I've ever read. It was still good. I still
yeah, definitely. It definitely was a good story. Can move the plot forward. I love Carlos Pacheco's art on this. It's always so cool to see his work. That covers all of my books actually this week.
Everything?
I mean, I read. You know, I hate to say this. I skimmed. I skimmed March 3, and I loved it. But I haven't finished it. So
yeah. Well,
I mean,
get
to the end of it.
I've read some books, but they're not really worth. Talking about necessarily all of them, but okay. a couple things I will mention though. I did actually read the Suicide Squad Rebirth.
Okay.
And I will say that the point of this special, as the Rebirth special, is to set up the team dynamic differently. So even if you're familiar with Suicide Squad in the past and you're afraid it's going to be more of the same, it's not, because they make it real clear in this issue that things are going to be coming along differently, and I'll just leave it at that without spoiling stuff.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you've never read it before, then this is going to be perfect as a jumping on point. And it's, they're loading it up as a straight action, you know, title. So it looks like it's going to be a lot of guns blazing and body parts flying and, that type of deal. So if you're into that, then this will probably be an okay book. We had a new Superman this week. Superman number 4, that continues the battle with the Eradicator, and I know he's in this one because he's on the cover. So I'm not
that was a semi-deep dive into some of our more recent episodes where we talked about the Superman books and got a little confused.
One thing that I thought might be undone in this issue was not undone, and so it appears to be a little more semi-permanent than I thought.
Right.
We find out one of the characters, I'm going to try not to, you know, spoil stuff, but one of the characters that we've been watching develops a little more fully into the character that we know is coming later on down the pipe in the Rebirth DC Universe. So we're seeing what brings this character out and
right.
pushes them to be who they're going to be. So so it's enjoyable. I think that the Superman books have been starting a lot better now than they did at the beginning of the New 52. The beginning of the New 52, a lot of the stuff seemed almost unreadable, and this has actually been a lot of fun. And so I think part of it is, the key word is fun with these books this time around, that they're just allowing the creators to kind of go nuts and just, you know, do some crazy stuff with them as opposed to trying to, you know, forge some sort of new identity. And it's not, even though things are very different now from where they were in New 52, it's not like, it doesn't feel like everything was just wiped out and started over for no reason. The story has evolved, not, you know, been reborn, I guess, is the way to say it. So I've enjoyed it quite a bit. And then Justice League also came out this week. And I'll give him credit because the story finally started to pick up some pace here. I didn't really care for the special, the Rebirth special, and number one I felt was a lot more of the same. Here we are in issue two, and we're finally starting to get some cracks in the teamwork that, you know, Superman is a different Superman. It's not Hal Jordan. You've got Power Ring and Baz, however you say his name, Green Lantern on there, so it changes. That's enough to change the dynamic because certain things you thought you could count on, you can't count on, and certain relationships aren't there. You know, Batman and Superman are not best friends right now because Batman doesn't trust the Superman because he doesn't know him because he's from some alternate timeline, you know. So we're seeing that the team doesn't exactly work the way you think it should. And so, again, you have expectations, and they're playing with those expectations, so I appreciate that in that story. Let's see. What else came out this week? I mean, I can do some quick hits, I guess, on a couple things.
Yeah, how about that? We're at that point.
So. Yeah.
Like, Daredevil had an annual. I don't know if anybody read it.
Skimmed it. Not well. I didn't read it well enough to talk about it.
It's fine. I mean, it's decent as a one-off standalone special, basically. It doesn't tie into anything in continuity, so you don't really have to worry about that. The artwork is not particularly great. It has like this sketchy pencil feel to most of it that it just looks unfinished. And I think what they were trying to do was your main character in this is Echo, who's a character that is deaf but can see sound, kind of an opposite of Matt Murdock.
Right.
And so I think they were trying to make things kind of fuzzy because of the way she sees things, but instead it just looked like unfinished, unpolished artwork on a lot of it. So, you know, I mean, the story itself was fine, but it actually felt like a redo of a story from the 60s from an old Flash comic book,
no
to
kidding.
Be quite honest, that I'm going to have to try to dig up to see if I can check on the similarities on that. But, I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't anything all that great. And then there was a backup story, but it was pretty forgettable. So overall, you know, unless you're a Daredevil completist, or maybe you've got, you know, a kid who they want to read a one-off, but they're not sure they want to, you know, actually read an ongoing series type of thing, you can grab this for them. It's fine. You know, but it's just nothing special. It doesn't blow you away. It's not tied into continuity. So
we had a story about this. Well, I'm actually glad you brought it up because that would keep us from having to deal with it. I mean, not deal with it, but talk about it. Because basically it seems like this was basically just bringing back Echo and Gladiator. Because Echo was dead before now, so I guess that's what all this story was, or this issue was bringing up, supposedly. And apparently they didn't, like, there was nothing, or at least from the article that I read.
No, I mean, if she's been dead, then there's, I don't know anything about that, because in this, right. she's at a concert with her boyfriend and things go weird.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, because they don't really, it sounds like, from what I read in the article, they don't mention the fact, but yeah, she has been dead for some time, and they didn't, I guess they didn't actually bring it up since you're saying that.
I mean, this could be one of those things where they had a script in a drawer, you know, and they just said, hey, let's do this for an annual. But it's just, I don't know, I'm always kind of torn with annuals because on the one hand, I love when they tie into the story and they do something big, you know, for the story. Like, here's your chance to tell like a big epic part of your tale. But then at the same time, it's nice, depending on the story, to have a standalone story that you don't need all of that baggage, you know, to enjoy it. But this just didn't, I don't know. Like I said, it didn't feel like all that special a thing. It was just there. This honestly, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, that we're sitting here talking about it this much, and I didn't expect to. But it reminds me a lot of the kids' comics that Marvel used to do called Marvel Adventures, where they had Iron Man and Captain America and Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, and they would do these, every issue was a standalone story. And it would switch, you know, so one month it might be Iron Man, another month it might be Captain America, you know, whatever. And they were, you know, standalone stories, nothing really moved the characters. There was no evolution of characters. You never saw, you know, any concrete changes that happened over time. It was just, here's somebody, here's how their powers work. Here comes a villain, they stop them, the end. You know, your basic comic book story. And that's really what this felt like. This very easily could have been as part of the kids' comic line if the artwork had been different. If they pulled in a different artist, this would have been perfect for a Marvel, you know, digest that they sell in amusement parks or, you know, something along those lines that's skewed more towards kids.
Okay.
So, one other book that I'll throw out real quick, and that is Spidey. And Spidey is... Oh, I just killed my viewer. What happened? Oh, oh no. Ah, I don't have my mask on.
Oh, no! No! We haven't seen dirt.
I was going to say,
it's actually cool here on the East Coast right now. I mean, not cool, but like a little bit less than temperate, like 80-ish. So. No,
actually, we got a good bit of rain, but it's still a little bit muggy. But anyway, that's your weather report from the comic book at this point.
Hey, that's 3 points on the map. All very, very different, very far away from each other.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Spidey, even though it is a kid's book, they are starting to weave continuity into this one. Even though it is geared towards younger readers, they're building little bits from each story. It's not as deep as you're going to find in the mainline Marvel books, obviously. It's not issue to issue. Each one works as its own standalone story, but there are little crumbs that are carrying from certain issues to certain issues. And in this particular book, he's being attacked by Kraven, the hunter, and Kraven... You know, everybody knows Kraven. I mean, Kraven's, he's a guy, he sees the superheroes, he wants to prove that he's better than they are, so he goes and attacks them and tries to make them part of his, you know, collection, whatever. But you find in this book that even though that's still who the character is, that's not why he's in this book, and that's not why he's going after Spider-Man. So I'll, without, you know, spoiling what's actually going on here, there is a deeper subplot going on, and it is helping to build to something that's going to pay off in the future. So the book is starting to get to that point now where they've got enough issues that they can start pulling these little things together to start weaving the story. And my son loves this book. Like, he loves Spider-Man, but he loves teenage Spider-Man. He doesn't care so much about what he calls now Bruce Wayne Spider-Man. who's the current one.
So perceptive. So perceptive.
So this version of Spider-Man is a character that he likes a lot more. I love this series as well, but it's now getting to the point where it's building its own continuity and it's weaving these things together. And so even though it's like it's supposed to be canon, and so it's set in the past, but the past is kind of undetermined because everybody's walking around with cell phones and talking about YouTube, so it's not, you know, exactly in the right time period. It seems to be, you know, modern day, even though it's the past of Spider-Man, but Spider-Man now is modern day, so I don't know exactly how this all works out in Marvel editorial, but it's very enjoyable. It's a lot of fun, and it's building a mythology within the book here and starting to do some really interesting things. So it's one of those books, if you can just read one issue, you're going to get a decent story, standalone, one and done. But if you're reading the series, you're starting to get payoffs for... you know, different things playing out in the subplots. So, it's a great book, especially if you've got kids or you want something a little more fun or something that's a little less tied into everything else in the Marvel Universe. It's definitely a series you should be checking out.
Cool.
The one thing that this book always reminds me of, and I've said this every time we've brought it up, is...
From Spider-Man, nobody knows who you are.
So yeah.
Nice.
That's a weird version of that one, but all right, no, we'll go with it.
That was all right, cool.
So we got anything else for rapid fire quick clicks? Because I got a couple that I can blow through real quick.
I didn't have a chance to read Badger yet, and I want to apologize to everybody because I love Badger, and Badger's been so great, and his battle with Vladimir Putin is wrapping up in this issue, and I didn't have it. It doesn't come out digitally. It's only in paper, and the paper copy, I have sitting next to my chair, and I completely forgot it was sitting there, so I have not read it yet, but Badger, the final issue, came out this week. Everybody make sure you check it out.
Damn it, Dirt, you failed us.
I know.
You had one job. Okay, Rod, finish up, and I wanted to touch on something from Moon Knight number 5 when you're done.
Oh, well, go for it now.
I just wanted to point out that when I was reading my my review copy, I hadn't had a chance to flip through my my paper copy yet, and I realized that the art in Moon Knight number 5 was a jam session type deal, and very quickly I realized that one of my favorite, newly favorite artists, James Stokoe or Stokoe, had a few pages in the middle of, or towards the beginning of Moon Knight number 5 this week, and there's a beautiful, obviously it's computer assisted because of the Earth. I may be wrong, actually, now that I look at it, but I'm going to hold up the page to the camera. This page was absolutely stunning. Stunning, stunning stuff.
Yeah, he did one of the Godzilla books, but I can't remember the title of it.
Half-Century War.
Okay. So that was the page I was
alluding to. That was awesome. Half-Century War was awesome.
Yeah, so that was the page I was alluding to earlier.
Okay, right. See, I thought you were talking about one of the ones with the pyramid in the background, and I was like,
no, that
one
was
sure.
Good too, though. Yeah.
I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. But no, that was definitely the one for people who's watching the video.
Yeah, he's a great artist. I don't know if he just came out of nowhere, if he's been doing stuff on the indie scene that I just haven't.
He's been doing stuff, right. I was about to say, he's been doing stuff on the indie scene, but he is notoriously slow because, let's face it, that work is ridiculously detailed. So, I guess to pay the bills, he does these like kind of one-off covers and spot work for Marvel and for IDW, you know, while he's doing his own stuff. But anyway. Right. Cool. I'm glad that you guys even mentioned that something related to that because I was so taken aback by that. I was so, you know, I was so impressed. I was like, wow, that's a great page. I got to see that. I got to see what it looks like on the printed page.
Yeah, I kind of wish not just because of that, but that was a pretty good spread because I read it digitally, so it doesn't play as well. But it still looked pretty good.
Yep. Uh-oh.
No, you're fine. I hit a moving folding chair.
Ah. So. What, are you in a ring?
I just took a hit to the back of the head while doing the show. The things I do for this show, you wouldn't even...
Seriously, even next thing you know, we're going to hear the glass shatter. You know?
I don't know, I'd be breaking tables over there. But, all right, that expends my wrestling knowledge for right now. So, we will get on real quick to Harley Quinn number 1. There's really not much to say about this book outside of the fact that if you didn't know about Harley's backstory by now, this will pretty much tell you everything up until now, including a couple of events of the last volume. Like most of this issue, well, I got a third of this issue is pretty much spent on her backstory. You have a couple of pages in the beginning with her and Poison Ivy, spy day type of thing, and then it goes into the backstory stuff and, you know, getting people caught up on what's her life and what's been going on, and then it gets into the story, which it's the same team as it was last volume, so the same humor is still there, and the same little, you know, background stuff is still there in the art, and it is still a great story.
One thing that's interesting is that this is not Harley Quinn Rebirth.
Right.
This is Harley Quinn number 1 during the Rebirth event, so she's not getting a Rebirth special because there's no Rebirth. Like, there's nothing reborn with Harley Quinn in this era. It's exactly the same as it was before. It's just a new number one because it's a line-wide push. So
right. She
gets a new number one, but there's no Rebirth special that precedes it.
But this might as well be her Rebirth issue because it kind of goes through those beats. So there's that. But then it goes into, I guess, what there is of the story in there. Let's just say it's a familiar story. Alien comes to town. Alien hides itself as one of what it thinks to be the most intelligent species on the planet. That species gets ground up into hot dogs and...
Oh, no.
And this being gets eaten and then zombies.
Oh, yeah, so, makes sense. Yeah,
total.
Oh, and, of course.
Yeah, so then we have the rest of the issue titling that to... As you, it would go in... You know, with dealing with Harley Quinn, so in spectacular fashion.
Speaking of Harley Quinn, if you guys want some nightmare fuel for some Harley Quinn fans, they have a new box set with a mask and trade paperback here. So this is, if you go into the stores and buy this, we actually, you know, got a half dozen of these things in. The mask is sitting up front in like a boxed window, and the book is behind it. So when you put it on the shelf, it looks like you've just got Harley Quinn's head decapitated, stuffed in a box on your shelf. And this, I swear, this thing has eyes that follow you like a painting in an old Victorian mansion. This is the spookiest, most disturbing looking Harley Quinn gift set I've ever seen, which probably means it'll sell like hotcakes to all the crazy Harley Quinn fans out there.
Hey, Halloween's coming, so.
So there you go.
Yeah, and I guess while we're on it, let's see, what, Harley Quinn and the Suicide Squad came out this week, and I believe there was another coloring book that stars her, that's about her, that just came out this week, I think.
Well, I know there was Harley and her gang of Harleys.
Yeah, Harley and that also came out. I can't remember if the coloring book came out. And I don't remember, wait, did the Suicide Squad?
I did see the coloring book. The coloring book did come out this week. I saw it on the shelf.
But I didn't read that, the gang of Harley's book, but they show up in her book, so it's like, I don't know. And I think that's issue 4, which is like one more left or something like that of that one. So I don't know where, I've not been reading that one, so I do not know. But the last book I have before we move on, well, as we go on, is Mycroft Holmes and the Apocalypse Handbook number 1. And the most as I can say about that is if you enjoy, if you have enjoyed Sherlock, let's say, I think, and especially the bits that involved Mycroft Holmes, you will probably enjoy this. I found it kind of interesting because it is written in, you know, that kind of obvious fashion at this point. You know, there's a lot of deduction and reduction, and this is pretty much centered around Mycroft, except that Sherlock does kind of pop in for a few pages near the end, and then kind of pops back out as Mycroft is kind of whisked away by some folks, and they're the banter between them as you expect them to be. And if, like, again, if you have watched Sherlock and have seen their banter in there with each other, it plays pretty much the same. This book is being written by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is a Hall of Fame basketball player and polymath.
Oh, is that who that guy is?
That's who that guy is.
You know, yes. I saw Jabbar. I thought he was the genie from Aladdin.
So yes, and he's kind of gone on record as being a big Sherlock Holmes, and I think as also obviously Mycroft Holmes fan. So I'm not sure how this came about, but apparently, you know, knowing that, I guess he was approached or whatnot. So I wanted to see, you know, how he was doing. I should have looked into this a little bit. The names of the book are also people that are co-writing the books with him, and the artists. Also, I'm not sure if he's like solo writers or he's like, you know, as they do with books that are quote unquote written by stars, they have other people written it while the star plots it out. So, but being that Kareem has done a good bit of writing, if I'm not mistaken, I think it is him solo writing this. So, but I would have to fact check that, which I should have done before now. But outside of that, I actually enjoyed reading this. This is a bit more roguish. Bit more roguish Holmes character, as it were. You know, we see Mycroft at a couple of different spaces early on, and I guess this book does still kind of place at that, because I guess he's about university aged at the end of this book. You know, because we see a little part in the beginning. There's a plot having to do with some science that. Is would not be probably found around that time period. Seems more kind of steampunky, but gets into those territories. I haven't seen these movies, but I'm thinking it may also might touch on the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. I don't know if they had some of that stuff kind of playing in it, whether it was kind of, you know, tech of the era that seems to could fit into there, but looks like it was still stuff that shouldn't, maybe may not be there. You know, type of stuff, and it looks like the adventures is going to be him going after this stuff, or because if somebody has some hands on some tech that was used, and I guess the queen is going to task him to do something with it or retrieve it or what have you. But yeah, like I said, I enjoyed it. I'm gonna check it out a little bit more and see where it goes. Now there is a brief part of nudity, so I would say, you know. That, you know, it's not much. It's
all the more reason to read. No.
But it's not a lot, and it's only like a panel or two. But still, you know, if you are sensitive to that kind of stuff, and or probably would think you would want to.
Five stars stack straight up.
Oh no,
that's cool that Kareem's got, you know, something on the side to do. You know.
Yeah. I hear he's been keeping himself, you know, kind of busy. So it's pretty decently written. Like I said, just like all the other references I've said before, if you enjoy those, I think you may joy at the way this is written.
All right.
And so with that, let us go into an ad read before we go into the news.
Wait. We got to do
clicks of the week.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Darn it. Damn it. Clicks of the week.
Easy for me. Doctor Strange number 10.
You know what? I'll go with you on that one.
Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
How odd. How strange.
Oh!
All right, Agent 70.
You can just hear the wheels are turning on that one, too, but that's fine.
I want to see if Agent 70 can guess what my click of the week is going to be, because he wasn't here at the beginning early on. So.
Sheriff of Babylon.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
You kind of wonder if he was actually listening in, but then again, you know.
I know what came out this week.
Yeah, exactly. I love,
and I have my physical copy here too, so I knew it came out.
I love that Sheriff of Babylon and Vision don't come out in the same week anymore, because that was murder on me picking a clip. Now they come out on separate weeks. I'm covered on two different weeks, and I don't have to choose between them.
Cool.
So you hear that, Marvel and Vertigo, put them back on the same weeks.
No.
Well, you did have two Tom King books out this week.
Yeah, and actually, we did talk about Batman earlier. So.
Yeah. Okay, and we did not get a pick from Tim this week, so...
Oh, I got that one.
Do you?
Let me see here. Let me find it.
Hold on. Let's see. Let's see if we can find it.
Where'd it go? It was... The Ravening, number 2.
Nice!
From Boundless. That was his pick, I heard.
Nice!
If you want a version of this cover without those little danger logos on it, you can go look online. They actually had like 8 different covers for this book this week, and 4 of them did not involve clothing. So, So there you go.
Well, alrighty then.
Do your ad read now.
Alrighty. So, let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcasts free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today.
All right, gentlemen, let us tag team this cinematic news.
Back again.
All right, nice. We kind of have that thing going. So the first up we have... Now I was thinking about whether I should skip.
I was like, where are you starting?
At the top.
I'm scrolling. They hear me scrolling.
Here's why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. shows Robbie Reyes' version of Ghost Rider. So Jeff Lowe got out there and talked to comicbooktop.com, and they asked him why it chose him over Robbie Reyes, and he had a detailed explanation having to do with a black charger and family, and, that's what it wanted to do with the show. So.
Because sure. The Nicolas Cage movies put a bad taste in everyone's mouth, and they wanted to get as far away from those as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good reason. That's a pretty good reason.
Yeah. I mean, that would have totally been in my answer. And the funny thing about it is, like, they had a dude that I called the Australian Wolverine, I guess, but he also had a chain like Ghost Rider. And his powers were kind of close to that, so I was kind of wondering if they were trying to set him up as that, but he wasn't a human, so that wasn't the case. That was weird. Actually, it was kind of more like an Australian between Wolverine and Gambit. It was weird. It's that guy. Oof. Anyway, next up, we have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Adrian Palicki. I guess that's how you pronounce the name. Boyd Sesson. Farland Palicki. Thank you. New sci-fi series. The only reason why I put this in here, because it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with comic books, is that because she was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there was a hint to where she was could possibly be back on the show. According to this, she is, the show that she was going to be on, the spinoff, is no longer null and void, she picked up this project with Seth MacFarlane, and because of her commitment to this, she will probably more likely not be on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I like seeing Mockingbird on the show.
I know. I love her Mockingbird was pretty good.
Yep. So, speaking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they have cast a new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's specifically Jason O'Mara, who is a voice actor that we know as the voice of Batman in some of the more recent Batman animated movies. So it's pretty interesting to see him cross over, and it's also very much a tease as to where the show might be going in the near future with you know, what Coulson's role would be now that there's an actual new director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, which we saw a little bit of at the last episode. So
sure. Oh, and the next bit of news is pretty cool because you know, seeing this online and seeing all the great notes and quotes and tweets about this was pretty fun. So episodes of the Netflix Luke Cage series will be titled after songs by the rap group Gangstar. Rest in peace, Guru. It's pretty cool.
And we already know at least four of them because Cheo Hadari Coker has been tweeting them.
That's cool.
The first one is Moment of Truth. The second is Code of the Streets. Third is Who's Gonna Take the Weight. And the fourth one is Step Into the Arena.
Oh. Now,
you know, all classic songs, you know, and I'm thinking if they keep up with the theme, there's going to be songs that you know, are known to folks. And
well, Step Into the Arena is pretty, you know, pretty big.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, and well, maybe not Who's Gonna Take the Weight, because I know I love that one, but and that was that one had some buzz when it was out. But like as far as like singles and stuff, you know, they'll
yeah, like more radio play stuff. I got you.
Yeah, but at the same time, there are many songs of that. I am friend of mine made a playlist of potential song titles that they could use in the show for, because Gangstars have got plenty of them that could work. So looking forward to that.
That's cool.
Let's see. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I don't know if you have news about this in the comic book section later, but tonight there's actually an event that Ed Piskor was at in New York. We're talking about the creator behind Hip Hop Family Tree, and I wasn't able to make it because I was at work. Boo, work.
I do not. No, I didn't. You have any more information about it?
Yeah, he's at the. I retweeted a couple of bits about it, but yeah, Ed Piskor is at an event. They're definitely probably still there. It's Hip Hop and Comics with Ed Piskor at the Museum of the City of New York, you know, and there's a reception and a book signing to follow. That was at 6:30 tonight, so they're probably still doing after-party stuff. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Ed Piskor, and, you know, in the New York State of Mind, he tweeted out a Nas lyric, so, you know, take a look for that, but that's pretty cool. I'm very sad to have missed that tonight.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing him tweet about that, like, a little while ago. Probably about a few days ago, something like that, but I totally forgot to put it in the lineup. So
it's all right. All right. So moving on, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 will not have Infinity Stones or Infinity Gauntlets or Infinity much of anything, really. You know, apparently we've known for quite some time that Thanos won't be appearing in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, with the focus being shifted to Kurt Russell and Star-Lord and all sorts of other stuff. So apparently, in a Facebook Q&A, James Gunn, the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, has revealed that there won't be much Infinity Stone stuff. At least, you know, this is the cover story right now in Guardians 2.
Yep. And next we have Avengers Infinity War will no longer be two parts. So we knew for some time that there was going to be a part one and a part two of Infinity War, and that has since changed. It is going to be one big movie, and the other... The part two movie is going
to be
another.
It's
going to be
Infinity back.
Nice. It is going to be another untitled Avengers movie, which could very well be that one. So I can imagine that Infinity Wars is going to be Batman Superman Ultimate Edition levels of long, if they're going to do something like that.
Yeah, if they're going to put in all these characters, yeah.
Yeah, or they're going to do some. Well, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see what they got going on with the story. But that would have to be something similar to big if they're going to, you know, if they're going to do something like that. I mean, obviously, it is what seems to be the next phases are leading up to, you know.
Sure.
So, and I guess part of the reason it seems like, or at least that's what the speculation is, that part one and part two, you know, broken up movies have been a thing in the recent history, but doesn't quite sit well with fans, which, yeah, kind of makes sense.
I guess either way. Either way, I'll take it however, you know, I'll take it, you know, the best way they feel, you know, that they're going to distribute it. Yeah. Either way, you know, we're getting these stories, and that at least gets me, you know, makes me happy.
Yeah, as long as they're good. And on that note,
yeah, I was about to say, speaking of this movie, apparently the writers are currently working on the third draft of it.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, sometimes happens.
Yeah, nothing movies. Wrong with revisions, people.
You know, they want to make sure they get the best quality story, at least we're hoping that that's the case.
Right.
You know, which would go into a rant that I won't get into right now about, you know, the state of comic book movies and...
Whoa.
No, nothing bad.
That's going to be like a solo monologue for Roddy on a special Treasury edition of the Comic Chronicle.
It's just interesting the numbers of people that are tied to this stuff. But anyway,
speaking of an actor who is now tied to a superhero franchise, who maybe didn't want to be tied to a superhero franchise.
Yeah, exactly. Jeremy Renner really wanted Hawkeye to die in The Avengers, so I guess he's trying to have his console moment. Now, and he's been on record as saying this before, but I guess this was another recent thing. Like, during a recent Q&A, he was basically saying, like, yeah, he was getting to know his role in the first Avengers, but he kind of spent half of it in the zombies. Basically, it was leading up to him saying, like, yeah, he wasn't really doing much with the character, and he was hoping to get a little bit more out of it. So he was frustrated, and apparently got to the point to where, I guess, during Age of Ultron, he was saying, hey, if you want, he was basically trying to give them an option to get him out of the movies, even going to the point of faking a heart attack.
Well, you know, he's too busy listening to old school rock advice. He was knowing his role and shutting his mouth.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know what the nature of his contract is. So I guess, you know, maybe that's why he couldn't just say, no, I don't want to do it or something. Like,
well, no, really... it may be just one of those things where he looks at the character of Hawkeye and he goes, you know, this is not a guy who gets a standalone movie.
Right.
You know, there's not going to be Hawkeye in the theaters in 2022 that he's going to be the star of. You know, the same way that you got Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and all this other stuff. So he's probably looking at it like, I have to be here for 4 months so I can film 17 minutes worth of footage for the screen. You know, all the time and effort and training that goes into what's really nothing. And as an actor, it may not be all that satisfying, you know, to do a movie like that where you really fade in the background. There's not a whole lot for your character as far as character development and that type of stuff goes. And you're basically doing a lot of stunts and a lot of CGI stuff. So, you know, you're not really pushing yourself as an actor the way you would in another type role. So, you know, it may be just one of those frustrations of wanting to act more and just thought, you know, oh, I'm going to get on this big tentpole movie and maybe that'll open something up in the future. And then he's kind of looking at it going, well, okay, Hawkeye is not the guy to get a side franchise here. So maybe... you know, hopefully he can, you know, go on to something else. But, I mean, he seems, the way I took what he was saying is that he seems kind of good-natured about it. Like, he doesn't necessarily not want to be Hawkeye, but he's giving them the option of, hey, there's not a lot for this character, so if you're going to write him out, then, you know, let's go ahead and do it. Don't feel like you have to put in 5 pages in this next movie so I appear because you want to be nice to me. You know,
right,
that's the way I was taking a lot of what he was saying.
Right, which that seems to be the way it's playing out, but yeah. Having recently seen Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which he is also in, I can see him doing a little bit more, I guess, you know, and even though even in that movie he's, and I guess by virtue of me knowing him as, you know, Hawkeye first, he's a little bit more animated in that one, and he does get a little bit of action, but he's still kind of playing it similarly, so there is that. But, you know, hey, that very well could be the case. And as far as him being having his own movie, I think Hawkeye actually could. Now, this is just me as a fan of the character saying this, so take it for what it is. Hawkeye could probably have his own movie, or at the very least, him and Black Widow could kind of have their movies where they're doing some S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff and that kind of.
Actually, I was thinking if you took Punisher from the Daredevil series, had Punisher, Black Widow, and Hawkeye all in a movie, that would be a good dynamic. for those characters.
See, but, what I was going to say is that they've established that Hawkeye is a farmhouse guy, so Pizza Dog and the building in Brooklyn isn't going to play very well. It's kind of sad.
They can go with old school circus Hawkeye, you know, even though I think that at this point they're going with the ultimate version of Hawkeye, which I don't think have that version. You know, they're going with shield trained Hawkeye. So, I mean, hell, Budapest, we don't know what happened then.
Yeah.
But he was in that Jason Bourne movie that came out a couple years ago, The Bourne Legacy, and I thought he did a good job in that. I enjoyed that movie, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, I heard about it. I haven't seen that one, so.
Yeah. But I was about to say The Bourne Legacy. I think I went to high school with the guy that plays the bad guy in that. It's a small world.
And he didn't get you apart in this one, huh?
No. No, we didn't. You know, we weren't that close. I just knew him.
I was about to say, was he the bad guy in high school?
You can ask at MantWang97 about that one. All right, moving on. So Mark Ruffalo has already finished his filming for Thor Ragnarok. So he has wrapped his parts of Thor Ragnarok. That's cool that he's done, which hopefully means that maybe they're wrapping filming on the principal photography soon. So
most of his stuff is like, as him personally is probably not that much, and most of his character being the Hulk is more CG and whatnot, so I don't think they would probably need him for that much. So,
yeah, they probably did a lot of motion capture for him too.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Jeff Loeb revealed why Marvel's TV superheroes haven't appeared in the movies, and this is pretty. It was a very pragmatic response and explanation. It's simply that the TV shows are produced on a much quicker basis than the movies, so it's kind of hard to figure out how everything would be connected. So they can't exactly put people, they can't cross-pollinate like that.
It's all connected until it's not.
Right. UFC's Tyron Woodley has been cast in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Who the hell is this?
He's a UFC fighter.
Yeah, okay, but, any other notable thing? Has been in anything else, or... Or is this? Are they going, as this article says, going the Batista route?
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Well, and also adding to that, we have another cast member to Spider-Man Homecoming, comedian Martha Kelly, who also I have no idea who that is. So I think we're getting to the point where the Spider-Man Homecoming casting, they're starting to get, you're just going to throw some stuff out there. Yep. I don't know.
All right. So obviously Benedict Cumberbatch is mystifying in new Doctor Strange images.
Except for his, okay, stop. Whoa. So
okay, wait. Why are we stopping on this?
Because this is one of those kind of misleading titles. Because it's basically it's like, all right, it's a damn calendar. It's not just images. What are you talking about? Mystifying and new images. Just say, hey, he's got a calendar. But anyway.
Okay. Moving on.
It's a good looking calendar.
The Rocketeer is getting a reboot starring a black female pilot. Woohoo! That is awesome.
Yeah, cool. Hadn't seen anything from The Rocketeer in years, so hey.
Yeah, is it time for a reboot?
Well, they just had a comic series.
I saw that.
Just an IDW series that was, I think, 4 issues, Rocketeer at War.
Right. Wait, that was like that last year, right? Or was that earlier this year?
That was this year.
Okay.
Well, first one may have come out in like December, maybe. I don't remember, but yeah. But yeah, no, it was brand spanking new.
Right, so they're keeping the name about. So good for that. Calista Flockhart will return to Supergirl. She is not she's going to be a recurring character and not a main character as she had been on the first season. But as Andrew Kreisberg says, she'll continue on the show when she can.
CW doesn't pay as well as CBS.
Yeah, exactly. I took the exact same thought. So, Suicide Squad's Margot Robbie reveals where she took the inspiration for her Harley Quinn voice. So if you don't know, Suicide Squad is out, I guess you might as well say today. Reviews have already been out forward to mixed reviews, but you can take them for whatever you want.
I'm curious enough to want to try to watch this. So.
Funny thing is, I read through a bunch of the reviews, and the reviews that hated it for the same reason that the reviews that liked it. And that's
were there more critics that didn't like it? And
well, yeah, I mean, I think it's sitting at like 46% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. So you're getting about half and half. But it's the things that people hated about it that disliked it was, it was more dark humor. It wasn't as uplifting and funny as they thought it was going to be. It didn't have that feel good. you know, superhero movie thing like they expected. And the people who liked it said the humor was dark and hilarious. It wasn't trying to be a feel-good movie for kids. You know, so basically everything that they, the reasons why the people who liked it are the same reasons why the people who hated it, hated it. It's like they're both describing the exact same movie the exact same way, except for these people it's a positive, for these people it's a negative. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find just, I want to see it a lot more. Because, you know, a lot of times you read reviews and one review will say, you know, the movie tries too hard to be deep, and then you read another one. It's like, this movie is really deep. I don't know why people can't see it. But in this case, the reviewers are saying the exact same thing. It's just some people like that in the movie, and some people don't like that in the movie, which is very odd in all these reviews. So
I'm totally going to hold off on some of the more technical and slightly more realistic criticisms until I actually watch it to see if they hold up. But yeah, I didn't really see a lot of those types of reviews. I actually saw a lot more like kind of practical like storytelling criticisms, and those are the ones that scare me, because if the storytelling of the movie is being criticized, then you know it's not going to translate. You know, the story won't translate. It won't be effective.
But at the same time, when you watch Ant-Man, one of the big things I heard people complain about Ant-Man is how Falcon was just kind of shoved in it. And they just threw in this scene at the last moment where he has to go to this warehouse and he runs into Falcon and they have this fight and there's really no reason for it to be there, and it feels like it's really shoehorned in there. And then I saw the movie and I was fine with it. Like, this
right, because it's a clear cameo. That's the thing.
Like,
yeah,
I know it's a clear cameo. To me, it didn't feel like it was completely shoehorned in, but that was one of the main criticisms I read about the movie. So whenever I read something like that, where people say, well, this doesn't work and this doesn't fit, and obviously they threw this in at the last minute, like, I don't know. Like, I got to go back and I got to watch it because, you know, some cases like Fantastic Four, you can tell when things suddenly shifted and
production
changed. My son owns a copy on Blu-ray.
I own a copy of Blu-ray. But I haven't watched it.
Really?
Yeah.
I own a copy of the Ultimate Edition of Batman Superman on Blu-ray because I couldn't steal it. And
I like it. I got the 3D version.
I actually watched half of it last night after watching Man of Steel, actually.
Oh, my gosh. I can't bring myself to do it yet, fellas. Anyway, let's move on real quick.
Going to the story, basically Margot Robbie took her voice from Arlene Sorkin's Batman the Animated Series, Harley Quinn, and also Lorraine Bracco from Goodfellas.
Janet Rossi's a whore! Too hard!
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, so Karen Fukuhara would like to explore Katana's backstory in Suicide Squad sequel.
Yo, I'd like to see her in a solo movie. All sorts of solo movies. You can get it, Karen Fukuhara. Hell yeah.
All righty then.
What's up, Karen Fukuhara?
I don't think I've actually seen a picture of her. But anyway, that's beside the point. Hopefully that happens for her. Because what it does sounds like Suicide Squad doesn't really go into too many people's backstory in depth outside of Harley's and Deadshot's, but I don't know because I haven't seen the movie, so take that for whatever. And speaking of this, I'm just going to go ahead and say I hate Rotten Tomatoes, I hate Metacritic and all those types of sites, and that report that Warner Brothers turned Suicide Squad into a mess over panic over BVS criticism. Now, again, this is a report, we don't know if it's actually true or not, but it's, you know, it's weird that right before the movie comes out that there's this thing that comes out and say, hey, yeah, Warner Brothers may have had some ideas on the way this should go and kind of rushed it, wanted them to rush it out, and that might lead to why the movie could be received negatively if it was.
I guess for me, the only thing is that when they first announced it, it felt like it was much more of a standalone film. Like,
right.
It's characters from the DC universe, but it wasn't supposed to tie in. And it sounds like now they've made it much more interwoven into the DC cinematic universe of Man of Steel, Batman, Superman, and Justice League. So it's going to feel more like it's a part of that universe, whereas I think originally the idea was more of just, you know, like, here are characters from DC, they're getting a movie, but not that it was, you know, somehow connected. And it seems like they made the connection much more blatant, but that's the only real, that may be what Warner Brothers wanted to push for, was to have more of that shared cinematic universe. But
right. Hey, see what they're doing? Do more of that. Which we can kind of safely say Well, we can say with some certainty that that's what they've been doing with Justice League, by the virtue of the way they've been handled Batman Superman in the first place, you know.
Yeah, well, and the way Man of Steel ties into it, you know, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So we can safely say they did kind of rush to get this out there for those reasons, but you know, if this is to be DC's Guardians of the Galaxy, it should be able to stand on its own. And again, I hate Rotten Tomatoes, and I hate the fact that studios kind of look to that as a meter. But I guess you got to have something.
Well, they always did. It's just not. It was never.
But that's one. Yeah, I've always didn't like it for that reason. But at the same time, you got to have some kind of metric. So
right
outside of ticket sale.
All right, so let's go a little quickly.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow producer reveals the Justice Society of America logo to a thumbs down from PCN underscore dirt. Okay. It's a stylized, hold on, the logo text around it, blah, blah, blah. You can check out the logo online. So it calls back to a Golden Age image. So go check that out online.
Yeah.
Cartoon Network's Justice League action will feature over 150 characters.
They are really pulling out, like, they are pulling things from this. It's like that one Scribble Dots game that they made for DC. Like, they just threw things in the left and right. Like, okay, what really is this? Where the hell is Space Cabbie?
What?
Space Cabbie.
All right, we're moving on right now. You just pulled out Space Cabbie. That's a next.
It says it in the article. It's like that is the kind of thing they're doing in this show.
Well, but I mean, that's to be fair, that's what Justice League Unlimited was, right? I mean, that was
But at least they
didn't go that. It wasn't that deep a dive.
Yeah, exactly. Like as far as they went is like Buona Beast.
Oh, Buona.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, come on.
I mean, okay,
Space
yeah,
Space Cabbie, that's still... Buona Beast. I mean,
it's not dead in the street though. Which I don't know. They may put any
hey, here's you know? Wait. Here's really seriously though. Okay. If this will allow for a mega toy line with over 150 figures coming out, just like the old Justice League toy line did, then I'm all for it.
Fair enough. You like that animated style model figure?
Like I wish those toys had more articulation to them, you know. Yeah. But being able to get a lot of those characters in action figure form that you never saw before,
sure.
Unless you were buying like one of those $30. You know, direct-to-comic shop type figures. I mean, that was great to get a lot of that stuff.
Gotcha. Okay.
And they are doing a Marvel Select type line, so who knows where that'll go. So, hey, hopefully alrighty. You get that. Let's see. Power is canceled after second season, says Bendis. Has anybody been watching this?
Sad news.
No, I mean, it's I'm a PlayStation Plus subscriber, secondary. So I get the show for free, and mm-hmm. I've never watched it. It's one of those things that I always thought, you know, someday maybe I'll get to it, but I don't know. I just never really felt that drawn to it.
I watched the first two, maybe three episodes, and I'm like, okay, they got something, you know, I guess they're working on something here. The budget is what it is, but it could go somewhere, but I never went back to it. So sorry to hear that, but it got two years out of it. And I guess it was probably hampered by the fact that it was on PlayStation Plus. Like, I know there was a DVD, it came out on DVD later on or something like that, but something like that, that comes out on a subsection of a subsection was probably not going to do that great.
I think if they had held on to it for a while, because they came out with the PlayStation View, I think is what it's called, where you can stream the live TV channels, basically like a cable package, mm-hmm. Through your PlayStation. I think if they had held off until that had launched and made it part of that, where it's like, hey, you can get your local stations, you can get these cable TV stations, and then plus we'll have you know, the PlayStation Network channel that will have, you know, these shows plus some of the other shows that they've done over the years, like Core and, you know, some of those game channels. Maybe if they bought the rights to some of the old G4 shows and was just showing, you know, reruns of those throughout the day.
Yeah,
you know, I'd be ready to watch Icons and Cinematech, you know, all day. That'd be worth the price of, you know, buying a subscription.
And actually, I still would, but yeah, you could do that on YouTube. But you're right, I would be watching both of those shows you mentioned. Actually, you say that. but yeah, I guess that could have happened. But then they also have Crackle, so they could have just thrown it on there, and it would have gotten a little more.
Oh, does Sony own that?
Yeah,
Sony does own that.
Oh, well,
so, all right.
And maybe it is, and I don't know, but I don't think it is because I would like to think they would have topped it that one a little bit heavier. So, but anyway,
50 Cent.
Last but not least, for cinematic news.
Right, 50 Cent is developing a superhero drama called Tomorrow Today with the Cable Network stars.
Okay.
Exactly. So Starz has begun developing a new superhero-themed drama entitled Tomorrow Today, based on a script by 50 Cent. The story centers on a veteran who is wrongfully imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit, A-Team. While in prison, he becomes the subject of an experiment designed to create the perfect man before breaking out and using his powers for good. So it's the A-Team and Luke Cage.
And Born Identity.
That's right. So.
No release date, but he's basically saying, hey, you know what, I got stuff on Stars, I might as well do something with it. And, you know, I made a pretty, if I do say so myself, a pretty decent reference as opposed to, as in this, in the event tag, but I won't go into that because I was proud of myself for that one. Anyway.
Is he doing the soundtrack, or is this going to be okay to watch?
That, see, I don't know, because I haven't watched Powers either, so I don't know if he has anything to do with the soundtrack to that one, but I know. I would imagine.
He's going to have something to do with it.
Yeah, I would go err on the side of probably not watchable. It's if you should call her like family friendly.
Yeah.
And it's Stars, so I would probably err definitely on the side of it probably won't be family friendly. But I don't know.
So we've got some. Is this comic news? Hasbro digs into Transformers history for some new figures?
Yes.
Okay. And you can follow up with the next Transformers comic book news.
Yes. So, you know, I put that one, that first one in there for Dirt, which I know he's keeping up on that one anyway. You can form his Fridays on his YouTube channel, correct?
Well, it's on Pop Culture Network.
Pop Culture Network, excuse me.
I don't always do it. I've just done a couple recently, but it's usually someone else has been doing them lately.
Okay. Have you seen this article? They're basically kind of going back. So basically, with the new Combined War series, they're doing that, so they're also pulling back into the old Japanese series and putting out a couple of figures in case Leo Kaiser, in addition to a couple others. And I think also, have you seen that big Fortress Maximus?
I've seen it.
The headmaster one that they're
going to get? Yeah.
So they talk about that one and this one, and they talk about like Leo Kaiser, and they're doing a lot of stuff like that. And the Titans Return stuff that I know you've seen because we talked about it. So that kind of stuff that they're kind of pulling in and making figures on. So it's some nice looking stuff to check out. So I haven't seen the Leo Kaiser one, and like I said, that's a pull that I have seen a little bit of that show, but I don't know.
Well, I can say, I mean, as far as this tying into comics, I can tell you that the comic books in the last probably 2 years have done a much better job of tying into what's happening in the toy lines, with certain figures that were being released to retail, we're getting spotlighted within the stories happening in the comics. And because the Transformers universe is so big, and there are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of characters that they have to choose from, it never felt really like forced, like suddenly, like, oh, this guy came out of nowhere. They always worked it in some way that made sense, just because there are so many of them, it's pretty easy for them to jump around like that. But with Titans Return and all of this, the Combiner Wars and all of that, there's a cartoon series that's going to be coming out, and apparently they've also been working to make the comics tie into the cartoon, which ties into the toy lines, so there's a whole lot more corporate synergy going on here with all the stuff that's going on in the Transformers universe.
Right, as I'm flipping through pictures of the stuff right now. But, and on that note, it is with a heavy heart that I must say that Transformers More Than Meets the Eye will end at issue 57. 55 just came out this week, I believe. So we only have 2 issues left of that. Now, granted, I know, Dirt, you've been, well, I know you have them, but you haven't caught up, and I think I've been trying to catch up myself with those, and it's just kind of hard because it's like 2 books, and there's a lot going on in them.
There are 3 pillars, basically. There's right. The More Than Meets the Eye. There's Robots in Disguise. And Robots in Disguise became just now plain Transformers.
Correct.
And then there's like a 3rd pillar, which they always have some sort of miniseries or something going on. So it was like Windblade, and then Wreckers. Yeah, and then something else, I forget. But, I mean, there's always like a third, almost like there's 3 series going on at the same time.
Like right now, I think it's Titans Reborn. I think it's the latest one.
Maybe, yeah, the special thing, so. But yeah, I mean, it sucks that one of them's going to end, but at the same time, there's so much material out there, and it's kind of hard to keep up. You know, one of the reasons why I've fallen behind is because the books are just, a lot of them are very dense. There's a lot that happens, and a lot of dialogue, and a lot of history, and stuff that goes into them, and they're not the type of books They're very unforgiving to people who just kind of skim through them. They're the opposite of what your mainline Marvel and DC books are, where you can kind of skim through it and you know exactly what happened. If you try to do that with the Transformers books, it does not work. It's almost like you got to sit there with a notebook and take notes, write down names of stuff that's going on, because they will reference stuff that happened 5-6 issues in the past, but not tell you, not re-explain it to you. You just have to remember that that's something that happened and go look it up to, you know, figure out how it ties together. So
right, you got the whiteboard with the pins and the string tied to them and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a very tough read to keep up with all that stuff. And for a lot of people, there are a lot of Transformers fans, and they only read those comics. They don't read anything Marvel DC. So if that's the only thing you're reading, then it makes sense, because it'll take you a whole month, you know, just to get through a couple books. So for them it works, but you know, for me, it's I generally have to sit down when I've got, you know, like a long car ride. I've got 6 hours sitting in the car. I know I can get through a couple of these things in order to move on through the story.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to see where that one go, but I would imagine this lends them to kind of have the main book is still there, so therefore everything will kind of fold up into that. And like you said, they do have that other pillar that they can work around. So good on them. Comixology announces more comics for Unlimited in August. There's some more, putting some stuff on it. It's more indie and stuff like that. Nothing you would know. They still don't have DC for sure or no. So, but, you know, go check it out if you want to. Let's see. The 2016 Eisner Award winners have been announced. Congratulations to all of those folk.
Yay! There's a nice long list on the comicbook.com article.
Real quick, actually, I forgot something in cinematic news. Kamala Khan makes her debut on the Avengers cartoon this Sunday.
Hey!
Which I thought somebody that happened last Sunday, but maybe not. So it's good to see her, because I know they've been saying they were going to put her and Black Panther and Captain Marvel in the show, and have been keeping up with the show, so I will have to check it out at some point. Also, Daredevil's Foggy Nelson could possibly appear in The Defenders. It's not known whether he is or not, but it's possible. Moving on, Greg Pak and Mirko Kolak?
Mirko Kolak, it looks like.
Okay, Mirko Kolak's Kingsway's West is
coming. I was going to say, I don't know which one's a typo. Mirko or Mirko?
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah. I'm going to go with what's in the article, because I know the headlines always can get messed up. So that's coming out in the month, and if you're curious about it, go check out the video that they have, a video trailer.
It does look good.
Yeah, I already have it. I already have it on my pull list, so because I want to check it out. I think it comes out at the end of the month. Final cutoff orders were this past week, if I'm not mistaken. But like I said, yeah, 3 weeks is coming out. So
cool.
Check that out if you're not. It's the story of a Chinese gunslinger searching for his wife in the Old West with magic. So. Now, here's the thing. We have people on the panel who either don't like magic or don't like Westerns. So, I don't know. You rolled the dice on that one, folks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you could just be a supporter of Greg Pak and give it a shot.
There you go. Like, I have to like both in certain respects, so this ought to be interesting. Black Widow and Captain America kick off new Marvel Ultimate Action Doll series at Disney stores. I will go ahead and pull this up real quick. They look all right.
I got to look at those pictures. I saw the post. I never actually opened the link to see the images. Oh wow!
Yeah, see that's the Black Widow one right there, and they're going with a near classic pose with the exception of the sticks there. And here's the Captain America one. Repeat all with right. Shield and patches.
Okay.
Well, looks all right. And looks like we'll say they're the Black Widow's 11.5 inches. Oh wait. Both of them are 11.5 inches.
Yeah, it's the scale, right? That's the scale that they're on. Okay.
And here's another version of the Black Widow with the accessories. And that's...
You know, alternate hands. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And then there's that.
Alrighty. So, moving on.
Sure. Anyway.
Yeah, moving on. We have connecting covers for The Walking Dead revealed for The Whisperer War by the awesome Art Adams.
Yep, we'll show that real quick. That's one of the showers. Yeah, like I said, it looks really good.
Yep.
I don't follow. Are you still reading Walking Dead Dirt? Or no?
No. I mean, I skim through it, but
yeah,
the last 30, 40 issues.
That's a lot.
Have been pretty much free of zombies for the most part. Yeah. They just basically appear in the background every once in a while. They're not the focus, and so I just, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. And it turns out the biggest fan of Marvel's Han Solo is George Lucas. Or maybe not. So basically, Mark Brooks was contacted by Lucasfilm and they said that George Lucas wanted to buy up all the original art from the first two issues of, is it all of them? Yeah, the first two issues of the recent Han Solo comic book. So, and that seems to be a kind of a big deal, like, because original comic book art apparently goes for something, but he wants all of it. Yeah, and that's going to be some money. So I guess it's high praise for the art.
That's pretty good. You know, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, pretty much. So congrats, Mark Brooks, on that one. And Mark Brooks. So Aaron Cooter exclusively signs with Marvel Comics. So congrats to him.
And?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let's see. So Warren Ellis and Phil Hester are teaming up for a book called Shipwreck at Aftershock Comics.
Hmm. Okay. So Aftershock's been getting some names, I see, but at least they're still trying to, I guess they're trying to keep it smallish, but they're getting some good names on the books.
Sure, you know, anything to, you know, kind of broaden the field of books that would normally be at Image, you know, or trying to be self-published, so.
Yeah.
Oh, you were talking about this earlier.
Yes, we can skip that one. Yeah. Captain America creator's names to be added on the statue. So we have talked about this statue. In the past, so apparently they weren't on there originally, and there was a change.org petition, which I guess worked in this case.
Right, by Joe Simon's grandchild, Jed County.
Exactly, and now Kirby and Joe Simon's name will be on the statue, so congrats to that, which I don't know why they would even omit that in the first place. So.
Yep, but good that that's, you know, that's being amended to kind of right that wrong.
Yep, and after August, on August 10th, we can see Agent 70 in full Captain America gear, as we said, striking a pose near the statue in Prospect Park. So go check him out. Say hey. I don't know if that's actually true. And I
it might be.
Oh, jeez. last but not least, so this was given to us by Matt Wang on Twitter. Shout out to him. Artist Tony Moore is pretty much selling a bunch of stuff on some sites. Because he's moving into a new house, and so he's giving up some stuff. Looks like a bunch of recording equipment, like microphones.
So he bought this house, and it has a full-on recording studio. Mm-hmm. So he's going to turn the recording studio into an art studio. But he's got all this high-end equipment. So there's all these microphones and soundboards and cables and all this stuff. So he went on this it's a high-end auction site, and he's got some of his original artwork, and he's got some copies he found of Walking Dead 1 that were sitting in his garage, and he had them graded, and then, you know, this random sound equipment, microphones and amplifiers and whatever, and he's got it all on this auction site. So you can go on there and you can buy some of his artwork and get yourself a nice microphone or a nice mixer while you're at it. But there's actually, what's more interesting to me is that there's a nice article that goes along with the whole thing that talks about him and his art process and how he came across some of the artwork that he's selling, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I just thought that was more interesting.
Yeah, like both sides of it for me was, especially I would actually like some of that equipment because I know some people who would probably be able to use it. I'm not saying myself. And last but not least, Gwenda Bond returns for a third Lois Lane young adult novel, Lois Lane Triple Threat, which I didn't know she had three of them, but apparently they must have been doing pretty good. And death endeth the news, folks. And endeth another comic book chronicles for
this
week.
Well, as we get in, I was going to say, we have one more ad read before we wrap.
Go for it.
Help keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcasts free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through cspn.us. Do it today.
And with that, we would like to thank you folks for joining us tonight.
As always, Tim will be returning next week with us, and we may or may not have a guest. We will.
Yeah, we will have guests. We will be, you know, we'll tease that out now. We're going to have guests maybe next week. You know, again, there's going to be a connection between the guests and myself and Matt Wang. We've already talked about this stuff tonight.
This is true. This is true. So, that being said, you can follow us at our individual accounts. Tim, who is not here, you can follow me at TimDog98 and at TBCron and at The Click Nation. You can find Agent 70 at Agent_70 and on Instagram, where you will probably see those pics of him in Prospect Park. You can find PCN_Dirt at PCN_Dirt and at Pop Culture Net. You can also find him on Vine doing his patented Vine reviews, which he's doing gangbusters on. And again, like I said, you can find me at RyderCat and at NewsNerdsNeed. You can find the show at CSPN.us. If I didn't say that earlier, which I think I did, subscribe to us on iTunes and all other podcast places. And, folks, we are done here. Thank you for coming out again. This is the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, and we are out.
Hey!